Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. It is Monday, May 4th, 2026. Hope everybody is doing well as we gear up for another week of Yankee baseball. Now, we've talked about this a couple times by now, but to keep you guys in the loop, reminder, we're now 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. We'll be live with new episodes of the Morning Yankee Show. I think most likely, not today. Today's will probably go more towards an hour. Happy Monday, chat. Also, by the way, I got a Keurig machine. I'm doing hot coffee now. Good morning. Anyways, the shows are probably more like 30 to 35 minutes, but 5 days a week. And we're going full on morning show with this. And I feel like that's more so the way to go is 5 days a week. And I just love doing it. So we're going to stick with the 8 o'clock time slot. I know today we went live at 8:05, but yeah, here we are. Start of 5 days a week. Happy Monday. Hope everybody is doing well. Of course, the Yankees are going to be wrapping up, going for the sweep, 4-game sweep of the Orioles tonight. Wraparound set. And it's Cam Schlittler on the bump. It's a funny thing where, you know, the Yankees are playing so well. And then you look, oh, who's pitching tomorrow? It's Cam Schlittler. Word up. Tomorrow isn't today. But obviously, chat, we got to get to the big news. And that, of course, is we found out yesterday after the conclusion of the game that officially the Yankees are going the route of optioning Anthony Volpe to AAA. And with that, Jose Caballero remains the everyday shortstop. And obviously, this marks... Officially, really, it doesn't mark the start of a new era. A lot of people are taking this direction with this news, and they're within their rights. This is something to where, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if there's many Yankee fans that are enjoying this team so far, but are still a little bit hesitant and kind of have their guards up because of years past. And knowing how the Yankees operate, which isn't always, you know, fans are correct, organization is wrong. No, there's a lot of things the Yankees... more often than not, do know more about than we do. But we also understand the game of baseball, I would say, to a similar level. And whether it be the eye test, if you want to do a deep dive on the production of Jose Caballero, which is a 5-war player extrapolated over a full season. He's been essentially a 5-war player since coming over to the Yankees. By that, I mean you take what he's done and, yes, extrapolate over a full season's worth. He's been to that level of production, whether it be the stats, whether it be just the eye test, knowing what Volpe has been, knowing how good the team has been, this was the way to go. And the Yankees are making a smart decision here. And what I was going to say is, I wouldn't be shocked if there's been fans out there that are very into this team and naturally get excited over what they've been seeing. But I think this move right here kind of allows you to fully believe that this year is different. With the Yankees now optioning Volpe for the first time in his career, a minor league option, he's sent down. And... you know, with that, it's the end of an era for many different reasons. He's no longer, while not the nail in the coffin, as we discussed on Saturday's episode, he's going to be, you know, there'll be a point this year where we do see him. It could be soon for all we know. But the era of Anthony Volpe is the future everyday shortstop for the Yankees. That ship has sailed. Now, we know Jazz is going to be a free agent next year or after this season. So he might, for all we know, have a future at second base. And that might be the route to go. We'll see. I'm rooting for Anthony Volpe. I like Volpe a lot. But... this was the obvious decision, and it goes along with everything that we've been seeing this year where the Yankees are putting the best team on the field. And, you know, this is something that we've talked about at length now on this show, me kind of talking about the point that Kay has been making about, you know, the Yankees and their sense of urgency, not caring about players' feelings, which is very much true. But the big difference that I've been kind of pushing back with is that, well, they have options this year. Last year, they would not have been able to send down. They would not have been able to send down Luis Gil because who would have been pitching? Like, we were relying on Luis Gil. He ended up being our game two starter in the ALDS. Or in the case of Trent Grisham, when Randall Grichuk was on the roster, he would just not play against lefties. And in the case now where Grichuk is off the roster, Grisham will play against lefties. He's been getting some hits against them too. But the Yankees will bat him ninth. Ryan McMahon losing playing time early. Every example that we've seen, Jose Caballero, obviously a part of this as well. But it's more than just, oh, the Yankees have depth and they're using that depth. It's depth that Aaron Boone has clearly been longing for and he's using it, I mean, perfectly so far this year. This has really been, honestly, what I was about to say is a great year for Boone, which it is, but almost for the fan that is often pessimistic, which is not my cup of tea. That's not really often how I roll, but I get it. Like, this World Series drought, like, often, or ultimately, we're on the same page. Like, the Yankees haven't won, and that's unacceptable for many reasons, but this being, whether it be the cherry on top or the culmination of it all, this one hits a little bit more. Because we know how the Yankees feel about Volpe. We know I mean, this picture right here of Volpe and Boone. Look how young Volpe looks there, by the way. That's 2023. This has been 3 years of, you know, not trashing on him, but ultimately he just hasn't been good enough, whether it be the offensive production or even the defense. That, to me, is honestly the biggest difference between Volpe and Caballero. Like, Volpe's had moments, you know, the World Series Grand Slam being one of them. He's had truly a year where he's been elite defensively. 2024, no joke. I mean, he was, I think it was 14 outs above average. He was fantastic. But ultimately, no matter which way you want to shape it, there's been good stretches, there have been good plays, there's been high points. But it's funny, it feels actually very similar to 2023, where when Volpe made the team, and now here where Caballero is taking over the job, it was such a perfect storm for the Yankees to where it's an obvious decision, it's the right decision to go this route. You start Caballero, but you also appeal to the fan base. And often if you were to appeal to a fan base, you're going to make the wrong decision. Like if you were to appeal to the fan base and not sign another outfielder and run out Jason Dominguez, who we'll talk about in a little bit, and have him start in left field where he's not capable of playing the position, that would be a silly thing to listen to the fans to. It would be putting a worse baseball team on the field just to appeal to the fans. That's not the way to go. Same with if you were to call up Spencer Jones and bank on him miraculously reducing his K rate by 10% from AAA to MLB. We'll talk about Spencer Jones a little bit later too, but in the case of this, it's the smart decision. It's the right decision. It's possibly a season-changing decision. It's the right way to go, and you're also like, we're on the same page. Like, it's cool. It is a good feeling where the fans and the Yankees are seemingly on the same page. Or not seemingly, they are. I mean, this is, we talked about it a little bit on Saturday when it was possible, but it's the boldest move by far of the Judge era, and it marks a new era. And in the case of Volpe, like, we'll talk about him more down the road, because again, this is not a nail in the coffin for him, but in terms of his future as like the everyday shortstop, them being married to him at the position, or just, I mean, whatever it's going to be, he's 25 years old now. He's going to hopefully get a good amount of run at AAA. Now, there could be a situation where, you know, the circumstance calls for him to get called up. And, you know, when that happens, okay, that's fine. And that could be, listen, it's not guaranteed Caballero will be this good throughout the entire season, whatever it may be. The metrics don't love him. But also, like, until the results fall off, I'm not too concerned about the metrics. And the speed's all part of it. He makes a lot of things happen. But again, the defense is particularly where I was most nervous about Volpe coming back, because Yanks really got a good thing going here in general. But up the middle, Jazz and Caballero have looked terrific defensively. And while Volpe, you know, at times has been an elite defender, there's still a difference where it's, you see a nice play, and like when Volpe's going well, like he's a good shortstop. He's fine when he's on. But it looks like Volpe has to try so much harder to be a good shortstop, whereas Caballero, it just looks so natural. It just, he just looks like a shortstop. And we always talk about this, but it should be somebody to where ground balls hit to your shortstop, you can just close your eyes and you can assume the play is going to be made. And lately, that's how it's been with Caballero. And, you know, he leads all shortstops in defensive runs saved. He's been terrific. He's been clutch. We know about the chemistry and everything about his attitude. I don't want to come on here and like totally turn this into a glaze fest about Caballero, which it ultimately is. But we know how great he's been. It was a matter of, do the Yankees see how great he's been, and do they want to keep it going on that track where he's our shortstop, he's our guy, he's who we're rolling with this team playing so well. And they made the right decision. They made the right decision. And listen, it is a shocking decision. It really is. Now, we kind of felt like it was headed this way come Sunday. There were some tea leaves. And the way the Yankees were talking, like, it really came to the point where it's like, oh, yo, this might happen. And then now that it has, it still is shocking, but it's refreshing. It's very refreshing. And it, again, just goes along with the Yankees. Another example why this year is different, not just because of the depth that they have to be able to make decisions like this, but they're making the correct decisions with that depth, and that's very refreshing. So, yeah, Volpe option down to AAA. We're going to keep talking about this. There's just other talking points to go with this. A few things just off the top of my head. I'm very curious how Volpe's going to handle this. Now, I don't anticipate him, you know, there being an issue to where, you know, you're going to hear him pout or nothing like that. He better not, and he won't. Volpe's a good dude. Like, I don't have any worry about that. But, you know, we've seen players like Clint Frazier, the way he took being sent down to AAA. I doubt Volpe goes the route of that. Will he go the route of, honestly, the poster child of the way to go, the way to do it, which was Jason Dominguez. Jason Dominguez handled himself brilliantly with this whole, you know, last year losing playing time, being optioned to begin this year. He was, we talked about this when he came up, but like my respect for Jason Dominguez, which was already pretty high, went up substantially with the way he's handled being sent down. Anyways, how will Volpe handle this whole thing? That'll be interesting. Also, obviously, he'll gain an extra year of service time as well, which not that I doubt that had any impact in this decision, although maybe it could have, but I'm not too worried about it. But yeah, yesterday Boone did say, and this was before the decision was official, he was like, when asked about what do you need to see from Volpe and just like kind of like what's going on, and this answer right here essentially told us what was going to end up happening, which was Boone goes, the fact is we're probably as deep as we've ever been, and that's a fact. And then Boone goes on to say, we have real competition for real spots and real roles in this team that we haven't had for some moments in time at some portions of the seasons. The reality is we have a lot of good players competing for roles. And then Boone would also go on to say, as Cashman initially did back in the wintertime, where he said, you know, may the best man win and keep the job, which is ultimately exactly what happened. But Cashman entering like this, you know, when Volpe's rehab started, it was a couple weeks ago, Cashman said, it's always been the plan for Volpe to take over at shortstop, which we knew that was the case. Like, that was the initial plan. That's what it was always going to happen. But things have since changed, which completely aids, you know, the thing of you can't lose your job to injury or, you know, or you can, clearly that we've seen. We've seen that, you know, time and time and again. Gio Urshela with Miguel Andujar, whatever you want to do. Volpe just, he lost his job. And it's something that we should all just for a moment, and it doesn't take much for me to compliment the Yankees, so I'm not even saying this to myself, but I've seen this across the board, and it's nice. It's refreshing on that end, too, where it's like, yo, I love seeing the majority of the fan base just, like, so happy. Like, everybody is, and it's a shame to a degree, because I was thinking about this morning when I was in the shower. Like, I'm just like, man, I wonder what Volpe's thinking right now. Like, Volpe's probably in the shower, too, and I don't know if he's still got his girlfriend or fiance or whatever. That one chick that looks like, you know, she's like, whatever. That has nothing to do with this. And I was like, man, I wonder what those conversations are like with her. Like, how we were talking the other day where it's going to be weird. Lombard and him are going to be at AAA side by side, which Volpe, by the way, is the plans for him to keep playing shortstop. So I imagine Lombard will be playing a lot of third base at AAA. But anyways, they're going to be side by side. And I'm thinking, if I'm Volpe, I'm looking at Lombard like, yo, that was me 3 years ago. And that should motivate Volpe. But he's got to be kind of going through it now. So I still just want to say, like, I love Volpe. I'm rooting for him. We'll see him again at some point this year. He very well could be the second baseman next year, you know, with Jazz departing free agency. I believe that's what will happen. But, yeah, it's not a thing where it's like, I mean, it is a thing where I'm celebrating. I'm celebrating more so the principle of it. I do feel bad for Volpe, and, you know, we could be excited about it without, like, trashing on him, per se. But anyways, what I'm saying is it's a refreshing move, and it is very nice to see the fans that I often will like, not lately because everything's going so well, but, you know, I'm more on the side of a shill. I lean glass half full. The fans that lean glass half empty, a lot of times, you know, those are people that I go at, or not even go at, but it's like we go back and forth and, you know, we don't always see eye to eye. But ultimately, you know, we're on the same page. We're Yankee fans. We want the same thing. In the case of this, we want the Yankees putting the best team in the field possible. We want them putting their, you know, best foot forward, whatever you want to say. And that makes me happy. That makes you guys happy. Like, we're all just, we're very satisfied with everything going on right now for many reasons. And this is, again, whether it's a cherry on top or just like the culmination of it all between the play we've seen on the field, the development we've seen of the pitching staff, and the emergence of Ben Rice as one of the best hitters in baseball. He's homegrown. Everything that they're doing, the turtlenecks, I mean, put the alternate uniforms aside, although I'm not sure that's actually even going to happen. Whatever, I'm just saying the vibes are fantastic right now, and there's just a really good feeling around Yankee baseball right now, and it's refreshing. So that's the news, man. That's the news. Anthony Volpe optioned to AAA. This marks the end of an era, the start of a new era. And with that, like, it's a cool line to put up there. I was happy writing this down, just seeing Jose Caballero will remain the everyday shortstop. It is May 4th, 2026. May the 4th be with you, of course. Also, the 19-year anniversary of Spider-Man 3 that came out in 2007. Neither here nor there. But it marks the start of a new era, and Jose Caballero is the Yankees' everyday shortstop. Pretty freaking cool. So let me know your thoughts on all this. You know, a lot of things to discuss here. But for now, this is what it is. Volpe in the minor leagues. Caballero remains the Yankees' everyday shortstop. And again, as for the future of him, what does it look like? They're going to keep him at shortstop, but he may want to start playing some second base because, you know, Lombard this year, I wouldn't be shocked if he's up. My gut still kind of tells me that, you know, to be honest, he probably will be at some point. And him playing third base may not be the worst thing in the world, because that's probably the clearest lane for him to get up to the big leagues this year, if they do want to go that route. But long term, he's obviously the shortstop, not Volpe. So, you know, with that in mind, maybe not this year, but come spring training next year, I mean, we may go into February, pitchers and catchers thinking Volpe is the everyday starting second baseman. That's down the road, but just to clarify and like really emphasize, this is not the end of Anthony Volpe, but it is the end of an era. He's no longer the future everyday shortstop, and the Yankees are going all in. They want to win. They're putting the best product on the field. And speaking of the best product on the field, let's move on, chat, to this. So the Yankees had a scare that they wouldn't be able to have the best product on the field, because yesterday Ben Rice had a little bit of a... He gave us a little bit of a fright, chat. Yes, he did. But he's all good. So this little play right there, jammed his hand. He left Sunday's game with a left hand contusion. And, you know, that freaked us out all a little bit. But one of those things to where, you know, I don't get ahead of it and try to plan for the worst case scenario. Sometimes I plan for the best case scenario and it can bite me in the ass. But I just wanted to see it through. And thank goodness, well, no matter what, the result would have been the same, because the x-rays came back negative and the hand's all good. So he's listed as day to day. And, you know, you figure he'll probably be out of the lineup tonight, maybe even tomorrow as well. But the Yanks dodge a bullet here. And let's take a listen to Boone on the injury and Rice afterwards on just kind of what happened with the hand and how he's feeling at the end of yesterday's game.
He kind of alerted me when he walked on deck. He said, hey, have somebody ready. This doesn't feel great. And then as he swung more, he's like, oh, it's feeling better. I just got to keep swinging. And then, but afterwards, I think he felt like, you know, I should probably go get it checked out.
How relieved were you when you got that x-ray and it came back negative?
Yeah, I was happy. I mean, it's what I expected. I knew it wasn't going to be anything serious, but it was just enough to make me feel like I couldn't take my true swing at the ball.
All right, so day-to-day for Rice, left-hand contusion. He's all good. X-rays are clean, which is exciting. What's also exciting is the continued ascension of Ben Rice, which now has him... well, he's been at this spot, but he's been fighting back and forth with Yordan Alvarez. Not really anymore. He's first in baseball in essentially everything. First in OPS. The only thing he's not first in is home runs, because Judge, which we'll get to in a moment, he went deep again last night. Yesterday afternoon. And Murakami, he continues to rake. Judge has 13. Rice has 12. But, Rice, his average up to .343 on the season. He leads in OBP. He leads in slugging. He leads in... WRC plus, I believe. I'd have to check the updated ranks this morning, but I'm pretty sure he leads in WAR. You'd figure that he does. Anyways, he entered yesterday with still hitting the ball really well, but 11 home runs. Judge was at 12, and he's continuing to give him a run for his money, chat. Here's yesterday's homers from Rice and Judge, and then a little soundbite at the end from Ben Rice. Take a listen to the last line. It's my favorite little snippet. I had to throw it in here because it just furthers just the difference with this Yankee team.
Not on the field of play. Rice rips one to right field. Gone. See ya. A bullet. He keeps on keeping on. Ben Rice goes yard. High fly ball. Deep left center. Tavares back. On the track. At the wall. See ya. A two-run home run for Judge. He moves one ahead of Rice. And the Yankees move two ahead of the Orioles. They're up 3-1.
Is there some friendly competition between the two of you trying to keep the Yankees home run record going?
maybe a little bit. But anytime I can be mentioned in the same sentence as him, I'm thrilled. So.
Can you comment on just how this team is rolling? It's 5 really good series in a row now.
Yeah, and we still got to finish the job tomorrow.
Fire me up. And that, of course, is tonight. Again, Cam Schill on the bump to conclude the wraparound series with Baltimore. Yanks going for the 4-game sweep. But, they continue to maintain the record through 31 games played or 32 games played, where the 25 combined homers between Judge and Rice, there's many different stats and, like, angles with it. It's pretty much, like, that's either the most in a Yankee duo since Mantle and Maris in 1956. This early through MLB, it's significant, obviously. And with Rice and Judge, we've talked about the replication of, you know, Juan Soto's production, which obviously we lost with him departing to the Mets, whatever. And in the case of Rice, him being homegrown doesn't hurt to, you know, make me feel even more excited about it. But just looking at these two together, I mean, there's many things I want to throw out here. But obviously, you know, if we want to talk the early AL MVP favorite, Rice is at the top of that list, along with Judge, along with Yordan. And ultimately, I'm still going to go with with Judge. But what would be awesome and interesting is if, you know, given the metrics with Rice and given how hard he hits the ball and everything that backs up what he's doing and the actual stats, again, 343, the OBP is insane. The numbers he's putting up are very Judge-esque, and it does make you kind of wonder, like, say they came season's end in a similar spot to where, like, just, I know it's early. Now, for Judge, I'll, no problem saying he'll probably finish, like, an OPS around 1.1. But let's just say, for argument's sake, they're both at a 1.1 OPS. Like, similar stats, which could very well happen. I wonder how it would shake up MVP-wise. Not too concerned about that. But it's hard enough to think of, like, you know, Judge and Rice being the new Mantle and Maris. But it's even better than that because of the fact that Rice is homegrown. And whether it be losing Soto and now within, you know, results-wise at least, just 2 years later, we've got him back. And it's from a player that is out of our own farm system. Things just right now, and Rice is a big part of it, with his development, with the pitching, with the Volpe decision, with everything the Yankees have been doing. It won't ultimately be a completely box check situation, you know, finished storyline until they win a World Series. Like, that's obviously what has to happen here, because, you know, we've had, at least in terms of vibes, we've been at this level before, to a degree, I guess. And emphasis on vibes, though. Like, there's so much logic that backs up the vibes this year. Like I was saying before, I feel like there's been so many Yankee fans that naturally get excited about them winning, but you have your guard up because you know how the Yankees operate, and you know, you're kind of waiting for the shoe to drop. Well, a decision like the Volpe thing kind of lets you bring your guard down and allow yourself to enjoy everything you're seeing with this team. And if you just kind of allow yourself to embrace it, you see, holy crap, they're a factory with their pitching, the prospects they have coming up, everything that we've talked about, we don't got to harp on. The depth, the emphasis on going all in, the sense of urgency they have this year, which is incredibly refreshing. But Ben Rice, for example, like, he's another reason, possibly the biggest reason why this year feels so different. And it just feels like the Yankees know what they're doing. It really does feel like they know what they're doing. And with Ben Rice, it's like, oh, you lost Juan Soto, but guess who we got? We got Ben Rice. And just the way that everything has worked out, which it hasn't worked out entirely because we haven't won, but on this very day right now, it feels like we're on our way back. Not to be corny and cliche, but it feels like we're on our way back to being the Yankees. And by that, I just mean like a model franchise, a franchise that knows what they're doing. And the Yankees have like known what they're doing a lot, but also there's things that we disagree with them on. And, you know, again, like one of the benefits of running it back or just seeing as, you know, things go on, whether it's in baseball or in life, like you learn. Like you learn where you went wrong and you learn where you can correct things. And, well, at the time, it's not a good thing, the Yankees being so right-handed heavy back then, or, you know, so strikeout heavy, or, you know, not caring about defense and being, you know, giving guys too much leash, caring about feelings too much, whatever it may be. Something's true, something's not, something's accurate, something's unfair. You learn. And the Yankees clearly have learned. They've learned that lineup balance is important. They've learned that defense is important. They've learned that, yo, you should probably put the best team on the field. You want depth in this area. You want depth everywhere. You want to be ready for this situation. You want to be ready for that. Like, that's a benefit of running it back, to where you can learn. You can, you know, make changes. You can do things differently. And right now, you know, I used the phrase perfect storm before, but this applies to it here too. Like, it's a perfect storm of the Yankees kind of riding where they went wrong, while also having, at least organizationally, the most depth that they've had, the most talent they've had in a pretty long time. And again, it's kind of like the perfect storm of everything working out, to where the team's playing well, the team's set up for the future, the team's set up given the farm system to enhance the current squad. The bullpen needs to be upgraded. It's the one thing about this team that's not World Series caliber. I think we can all agree on that. And because of their farm system, because of the position that they're in, even just with the pitching prospects, they're in a spot to where they can easily upgrade that one true weakness of the team, which is the bullpen, and then some, and go all in there. The talent, and now the process, is one that really can allow you to be like, yo, let's go. Here we are, finally. And that's an exciting thing to say, but also is, I don't think this needs to be told to them, because I think they're going to be, I'm excited for the deadline this year. And it may not be, you know, a flashy move per se. It may not be like a box office blockbuster acquisition, because I'm not sure exactly what that is. The bullpen, though, like, I think they know how much of a chance they have this year, and that's the one area that they need to improve on. they're going to go all in. And what I was going to say is, although I'm not worried about it, like, they better go all in, because this is more of a chance than we've ever had, is this team right here. And then, you know, you can get into, like, the chemistry of things, and that's a benefit of running it back, too. Like, Ben Rice is a big part of it, but just overall, like, this team, and hell, this front office right now, the fans, like, everything's clicking. And again, there'll be a point where it's not clicking, and, you know, things come back down to earth a little bit, but it won't, you don't feel like it's going to be because, you know, they're botching plays, they're, you know, not strong on fundamentals, or they're not learning how to play. I mean, there's a lot of plays that we've seen, even yesterday being an example, although there were some times where I was like, uh-oh, is this where the shoe's going to drop? Unfortunately, every time that, you know, there'd be like an error, Ryan McMahon, he's got to clean it up a little bit. We'll talk about him in a moment. But, like, you know, there was an inning yesterday where I think it was like the fourth or the fifth, where Fried, you know, a couple walks and you had the error the next inning by McMahon, where it was like, oh, the Yankees looked like kind of some people. It was after the Rice injury. So maybe it was just like everybody was kind of thrown off. The stadium was, you know, we're still holding our breath. Like, what's the deal with Rice? And just felt all of a sudden like, uh-oh, are we in, you know, Doomsdayville right now? Then it was like, nope, double play. And then later on, same deal. Like, you had the McMahon double play, which later overturned. But, you know, I was scared for a split second during yesterday's game. I'm like, uh-oh, is this where we start to see it, you know, start to unravel a little bit? And it didn't. It was actually when I was telling Chloe, I was like, now, I will tell you exactly how I feel right now. Like, gut-wise, this just reminds me of, like, a Sunday afternoon headache game to where they're up and, you know, you're playing well, so you kind of assume because you're up by one run, like, you'll keep on rolling, you'll keep on winning. But, like, in my gut, I'm like, I could just see this being a game where, like, like, they lose and I have a headache after, it's Sunday, and, like, you know, Sunday's, it's like, that's just what this game, but no, they ended up winning 11-3. And it's like, all right, word. Like, I was almost ready to be like, this game could, you know, unravel. And if we lose it, it's not a big deal. Wouldn't feel great, but, it, you know, kind of, again, like, you, even myself, very optimistic, like, you're still kind of waiting for the shoe to drop a little bit, and I still will be come June. Like, June's going to be a big deal, and that's another thing with running it back. Like, the Yanks will go into this year, go into this June, like, making sure that doesn't happen. Same with going into the series finale. Like, tonight, they know, yo, let's step on the throats. Let's get this job done. Win series, sweep series, and get the job done, see it through to the very end. Anyways, what I was going to close, like, you know, this just feels like a game like the Yankees, like, would lose, or they, like, could lose. And I was like, doesn't mean they will, though. And of course they did. They won 11-3. So, I mean, things are very good right now. Very, very good right now. And Ben Rice is a big part of that. Again, average up to 343, 455 on base, 759 slugging, 12 homers, a 1.214 OPS. He's homegrown. I mean, this is just working out really well with everything we talked about. But just like with Ben Rice, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled. I know you guys all are too. But it's the production. It's the fact that he's homegrown. It's just how awesome he is to listen to and just like how good of a dude he is. Like, I really like Yankees being good dudes. And we got some good dudes on this team. We really do. Like, who's unlikable on this team? Besides Jazz, I consider Jazz to be, when things aren't going well, very unlikable. When he's doing well, though, and lately, he's not even doing well. He's actually run through some bad luck lately. But Jazz hasn't been bothering me lately. I was close to tweaking on him with the AirPod, but it wasn't an AirPod. It was he had a thing with his ear. It was a little, what was it called, cotton ball. But even Jazz, it's like, I consider Jazz to be unlikable because I think he's so talented and it pisses me off that, you know, he kind of acts like he's a superstar and he's not yet. But even him, like, if that's our most unlikable player, and unlikable is a rude word to use, but you know what I'm saying, we're doing all right. Like, I still think Jazz is awesome. He just pisses me off because I think he can be even more awesome, if you know what I mean. And the way he handles with the media sometimes is obnoxious. Sometimes he's great, but sometimes he's, you know, a diva, and it's irritating. But Jazz, I love you. Everything's right. I love everybody. Chad, I love you. Reminder, we'll be live tonight for Game 4 against the Orioles. 7 o'clock, we'll be live. First pitch is at 7:05. We have much more to talk about here. Reminder, highlights I've ran into a little bit of an issue with to where I can't post them right now. I'm working on it, but they are on a break in the meantime, and hopefully there'll be a resolution. Cannot emphasize enough, it's nothing to do with John Boy. If anything, that might be my way out of this, but, you know, it's an official business now, kind of, Yanks have, and essentially, you know the line, this copyrighted telecast may not be disseminated without the express written consent of the New York Yankees and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form without the express written consent of the New York Yankees and Major League Baseball, blah, blah, blah. That's kind of what we run into here. Now that I'm official business, like, it is content that is not technically transformed enough to be able to upload, and, you know, there's an issue I've ran into with that, so I'm working on it, but an update on game highlights, that's why there hasn't been any on the channel. They are on a break right now in the meantime, but hopefully we'll be able to work that out soon. We got much more to discuss, Chet. You know what? Before I even take a sip, let's play this. Jason Dominguez yesterday, 3-for-5, first homer of the year.
High fly ball, right field. O'Neill back on the
track at the wall. See ya! A two-run home run for Dominguez. He reaches the seats, and the Yankees now lead by three. Dominguez from the right side rifles one down the left field line. He'll get an RBI. He has two hits on the inning, a home run and a double, and he has two hits from the right side today.
How much better are you seeing the ball from left-handed pitchers?
No, I've been working for a long time in my right side, and I'm glad the work that I'm putting is showing up.
Awesome. 3 for 5 yesterday, and yes, first home run of 2025. Now, that was against a righty, but the two hits, otherwise, both of which doubles, the second one you saw in the same inning there, were against a lefty. So, three hits in the day, two of the three against the southpaw, and obviously we know last year Jason was pretty damn good against righties, at 274, 118 WRC+, lefties, not so much, actually complete opposite, 204 against lefties, and was quite brutal at the plate against them. And that, along with the defense, with the defensive questions still remain. And, you know, where I'm at right now is just, like, Jason's a DH. I don't have any, like, he can't play the outfield. He's not going to start over Grisham in the outfield. He's a DH. But for right now, he's getting run at DH because Stanton is out. By the way, Stanton resumed hitting this weekend. He says his calf is feeling better. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Stanton back on the road trip, and I don't think he'll need a rehab assignment. And the road trip begins on Thursday, and including the Subway Series, which begins after Milwaukee and another game, a series against Baltimore. In Baltimore, we go to Citi Field, so it's like a 12-game road trip, but the last series is at Citi Field, so whatever. Anyways, I think Stanton may be back during that, but in the meantime, Jason Dominguez is getting run at DH, and just talking about him as the hitter, we know what he can do against righties. It was not out of the question that he could improve against lefties. That's another thing, not to be, you know, harping on, you know, the point of running it back, but it's a pretty good time to do so, I guess. Like, sometimes people just rule out that things can be different, which we should never rule out. That's, like, the one thing that's guaranteed in life is change. And whether it be, hey, like, Will Warren might get better. He might not be a 4.44 ERA. And guess what? He's improved. This guy could get better. That guy could get better. We'll talk about Cody Bellinger, who was great last year, but there's a difference in his season this year that has his numbers even better. Jason Dominguez could improve against lefties. And he did that in AAA. He hit .389 against lefties at AAA this year. And now that we're seeing this, what he did yesterday, it's very exciting because, you know, we talk about the depth of this team and the fact that, you know, even take Ben Rice. I would have been upset if Ben Rice had to go to the IL. Even like him not being able to play tonight, you figure, it sucks. Like, I want, because I want to see Ben Rice. But I couldn't help myself but also start to, and this is ridiculous in a way, but it's not, because, like, it just is, it's part of why I'm so excited about this team. I was almost looking forward to, like, man, I don't want Rice to go in the IL. And, like, I was shitting bricks yesterday at the idea of that. Like, I don't want Rice because I have, you know, end of season numbers in mind for Rice. If you want full transparency, Chad, we talked about Mantle and Maris before. I want Judge and Rice to stay healthy for the full season, if you know what I'm saying. Anyways, I couldn't help but wondering, like, how the Yankees navigate this. Like, if they lost Rice, one of the best hitter in baseball right now, we got Paul Goldschmidt ready to take over. Like, even just seeing the clip yesterday when Rice left, and it's Rice is out of the game, and then Paul Goldschmidt comes in. It's like, Paul Goldschmidt ain't what he once was. But, like, who comes in, like, three years ago, majority of this era of the Yankees or whatever, and this isn't even, like, that much of a knock on them, because, like, most teams aren't in a position to where if they lose a hitter as good as Ben Rice, not that Goldschmidt can replace Ben Rice, but it's, like, potential future Hall of Famer who's still more than a respectable MLB bat and player, and Paul Goldschmidt is who would take over in a quick little IL stint for Ben Rice, or has to come in when he leaves a game after, you know, the hand injury. It's something that I actually talked about a lot comparing the Yankees to the Dodgers, to where it's, you know, when the Dodgers signed Hyesung Kim last year, I was like, that is such a Dodgers move because they don't need him, but they don't need him right now. They could. And ultimately, it just makes their team better. He may not have a starting position right now. He may not, you know, be in the penciled-in lineup every day. And you may not want him to be. But if a situation arises where you need him, you have him. And, like, Goldschmidt's an example of that. The depth of, and Jason Dominguez, with him, that's just what we're talking about. I should probably get back to him. But, like, Stanton goes down, which we talked about it all winter long. Stanton gets hurt. Jason DH against righties. Goldschmidt against lefties. And now, maybe you want Jason, and I do. You do get Goldie some playing time still, but, and he'll play tonight. But I kind of want to see Jason DH against lefties. And I wonder, like, the question coming out of this topic, just to you guys, is like, say Jason, which he won't, you know, knock on wood, played the rest of the year. This was a DH the rest of the entire season. Would you bet over or under an 800 OPS? I would bet over from his production from the right side alone. But like, even if, you know, when you're as good as Jason can be, and again, a 118 WRC plus last year against righties, which obviously 18% better than league average, that's pretty damn freaking good. You don't have to get to the level of being as good against lefties, but we just need him to be competent against them. And if he can just be competent against them, then 800 OPS is probably his floor, at least, you know, given everything we know about his ceiling. So, you know, great day for him yesterday, 3 for 5, the 2 doubles in his first homer. And, you know, he'll still have his role. We don't got to spend too much time on this, but, you know, when Stanton returns, he'll obviously be the DH as he should be. But come the postseason, Jason will absolutely be on the roster. And that, you know, furthers the depth of this team, furthers them being good, because like we've seen in April where the Yankees don't want to pinch hit or pinch run for Stanton late in the game because they're like, oh, we may need his at bat later on. And it's worked out. Like, that's another way that Boone has cooked this year is those games. It benefited us a couple times where you left Stanton in, where I, live on the watchboard, I'm like, you probably pinch run Stanton here, right? You just assume he's going to be, you know, it's like a seventh inning, Yanks are really up by run, one run, or even up by a couple. They've left Stanton in on the base pass, haven't pitched ran because they may need his at bat later on. And that has proved to work out where Stanton came through later on in the game with a big hit. Well, in the postseason or just long-term, once they're both here, you know, once Stanton is healthy, I don't know if Jason will be sent down right away, but whatever it may be, he'll be on the postseason roster. Well, easy. In the seventh inning, after Stanton starts to DH and, you know, he gets on with a leadoff walk, whatever the score may be, you can just pinch run Jason, get his speed on the base pass for Stanton, and then if his at-bat comes up later in the game and it's important, well, guess what? You got Jason Dominguez at DH. Like, it's almost like an in-game platoon that they can do with Jason Dominguez. I would actually do that nearly almost every day. I would actually probably do where, you know, as long as it works out, I'm not looking to take Stanton out of the game, but I would almost go into, you know, again, come October, Stan's starting at DH, but then after 3 at-bats, you can take him out and put in Jason. What are all these? Hello, what's going on right here? Holy shit on Rye, yo. John Sterling has passed away. Oh, man. Rest in peace to John Sterling. He just passed away. That's sad. All right. So, obviously, breaking news here live. John Sterling has passed away. And that's pretty insane. That is pretty insane. I got to post this on Yanks Ave, like, right now. Man. All right. So today we say goodbye to a legend. That's really sad. All right. So John Sterling has passed away. I got to post on Yanks Ave. Damn, I don't even know what to say, yo. Obviously grew up on him. That's crazy. One of the greatest announcers of all time. Just give me 1 second here, Chad. I'm going to post the news on Yankees Avenue. Let me just get the details on this, but that's... I mean, obviously lived a long life, born in 1938, so he was well into his, 90s. Rest in peace. He'll go down as one of the greatest broadcasters of all time, and we'll be hearing his voice forever. My kids, who are far away, but already named Ricky and Dan, they will hear the voice of John Sterling throughout their entire life. 'Cause we'll be watching, everybody will be watching. All the memories and highlights, 90s dynasty, whether it be, you know, the World Series runs through the 2000s or when I started watching in 2011, was an integral part of me, you know, coming up as a Yankee fan and Yankeeographies, listening on the radio. My dad, always John Sterling, and there was nobody better. Nobody better. He will forever be linked to the greatness of this franchise. Rest in peace, John Sterling. That is terrible. But it's terrible. It's shocking. He lived a long life, and he lived a great life. Sorry, just give me 1 second here, chat. The legendary radio voice of the New York Yankees, John Sterling, has passed away at the age of 87. And, yeah, I mean, he lived until he was 87. So it's a good life, called many great moments. And, again, he'll forever be linked to this franchise. Our kids' voice will hear him. I grew up on him. And, yeah, that's sad. That's sad. But if any of us could be remembered the way John Sterling will be remembered, we'd be doing pretty all right, because his voice ain't going anywhere, yo. Rest in peace to John Sterling. You're forever one of the greatest to ever do it. And we love you. Damn, that's sad. All right. So John Sterling has passed away. Rest in peace to a legend. The radio voice. The voice of the New York Yankees, John Sterling. I mean, it goes past just the radio games. It goes Yankeeography. It's always, it was John Sterling. Turn on your radio. One of these right here. Listen to a ball game with John Sterling. Sad. Sad. But he lived a great life. Lived a great life. Alrighty, so we'll try to move on here, but obviously thinking of, you know, John's family and all that. And we love him. We love him. And we'll never forget John Sterling. Okay, so we will try to move on here, chat. Obviously, I don't say like it does obviously dampen the vibes a little, but it's not a situation to where, you know, I mean, we got to figure out what the details are. But 87 years old, I mean, that's pretty awesome. And obviously, he lived a great life. So you know, we'll find out more details on that. But this just broke right now. But all right, we've got a few more things here to discuss, and let's talk a little Cody Bellinger. So Bellinger, he begins the week, 856 OPS, had a two-homer game on Saturday, now five homers on the season. I'm not going to lie, this feels weird, but, you know, I'm just going to keep on going here. But so with Bellinger, the two homers on Saturday, five now on the season. This feels kind of weird, yo, I'm not going to lie, to keep just talking about things. I don't know. This is new for me, chat, to I handle death weird, I guess. And also, I'm like, you know, we're live. It feels weird, honestly, to continue the show without just keep talking about John. But, yeah, I'm not sure what else to say about it. It's very sad. It's very sad. But he lived a great life, 87 years old. Yeah, we'll be hearing a lot of nice things, and obviously, rightfully so, throughout the day. The Yankees probably are going to, I mean, no doubt about it, they should throw on the black armband for this. This is significant. This is the voice of the New York Yankees, who we all grew up on, has passed away. I'm going to pull up the chat right now. I mean, I don't know if, would it be weird to, like, keep going? I'm not sure what's the standard procedure here, chat. Or we can just, like, chop it up and talk. Or something, Matt, keep talking, live a great life. He would literally want you to talk in, because that's true, AC. Yeah. All right. So I think we'll keep going here, but yeah, twin daughters. Been a Yankee fan since 2018. We'll surely be missing John Sterling. Was also a huge part of Brooklyn Nets history. That's very true as well. Yeah. John, he, you know, the Yankees are obviously what, you know, will be on his main mantle. But he, talk about, like, grinding. And this dude, you go back and see what he did, like, throughout his career to get to where he got. He did almost everything. I mean, he was all over sports. And, the Nets, he was a big part of that too, right? Cool. All right. Not cool, but I appreciate you guys saying so. Yeah, we'll keep going here. We just got a few more things to get through. In the end, he did live till he was 87 years old. So we'll talk about this more and more. We'll continue to make tributes to John Sterling, but, yeah, rest in peace to a legend. Rest in peace to a legend that changed my life, changed all of our lives, and made Yankee baseball an even better thing to consume. And we'll continue to consume his voice. As I said, his calls, everything. Like, I'll be showing the second my future kid, whenever, that's a ways down the road, the second he comes out of the womb, he's going to be having John Sterling in his ear. So, rest in peace to a legend. We'll never forget John Sterling. And you guys are right. You guys are right. He would want us to continue on and talk Yankee baseball here. So let's keep going and talk Bellinger. And then we'll continue to discuss this, obviously, throughout the day and for a long time, forever. We'll continue to discuss John Sterling. But yes, anyways, with Bellinger, so I mentioned before how, you know, the homer the other day, 2-homer game on Saturday, and 5 on the season. His OPS sits at 856. Now, last year, of course, had a really good year, and that led to him getting the 5-year deal he got, and we're all thrilled to have him back. One big difference so far this year, along with, you know, other things that remain to be great. He's hitting 286 runners in scoring position, which actually for Bellinger feels low. He hit 348 last year in 2025. He leads all left fielders in defensive runs saved. He's been terrific defensively. One big difference that is a big thing in having his slash line up to where it is. He's at 275, 373, 483 OPS, as we mentioned, at 856. So last year he raked against lefties. Raked. OPS over one dot. And he's always hit lefties well, but he actually against righties was almost not good enough. Last year, while an OPS over one dot against lefties, he had just a 741 against righties, which is above league average, but you know, for a guy that no matter what was hitting third behind Judge, I would have kind of liked it to be like evened out a little bit. Like a wanted OPS against lefties is great, but I would prefer a 900 OPS against lefties and an 800 against righties or an 850 against righties. Well, this year, that's exactly what we got. Not a one dot against lefties, but a 905 OPS against lefties. He continued to hit really well against them. Against righties, though, while a 741 OPS last year against them, 836 OPS so far this year. So very quietly, and it's funny, actually, this often seems how it's working on this show, which is another benefit of 5 days a week. I get to, you know, if I'm wrong with something or if I'm like calling a player out, like I get to address it the very next morning. And I'm always first. I like that, too. And I like to not have my thoughts on tampered by anybody else. That's why I always kind of, you know, I operate on my own thing. I don't want to be consumed by anybody else's opinion because it might be a good thought, but I want it to be my own. I want to, you know, see it through organically. I called for Bellinger the other day. I'm like, Bellinger's been fine, but we could use a little bit more power with Stanton going to the IL. And sure enough, the very next day, I think that we did a Saturday show. That Saturday morning, I said, could use a little more power from Bellinger. He ends up hitting 2 homers. Anyways, his season now is in a great spot. Very quietly having a better year so far. I know it's early, but, you know, we'll keep on saying that when you're doing a show every single day, when you're talking about stuff on a daily basis the way we are, like, this is what we got right now. Right now, Bellinger's an 856 OPS. He's playing better than he did last year. So, you know, obviously very happy to have him back, and he's awesome for many reasons, and he very much fits the narrative of chemistry with this team. It is cool to see, you know, when things are going well, we have no problem admitting to, like, where we were wrong, and I fall into this with Bellinger a little bit too. Like, I wanted Kyle Tucker. I actually wanted them both. One thumbnail I made was I was like, it's time to go back to George Steinbrenner mode. I put him on the thumbnail as like a force ghost, like looming over Hal. And I was like, Bellinger or Tucker? No, sign both. But ultimately, that stemmed from, like, Tucker is the better player than Bellinger. But that just means, like, stat-wise, that means, like, what his ceiling has been. And, you know, the floor for Tucker had been great, but injuries, whatever. Bottom line is, I and anybody else who was calling for Tucker, whether it was with both of them or Tucker over Bellinger, many people were, which I can, you know, forgive the idea of that. You got people saying, Bellinger, I'm sorry for wanting Tucker. Like, Bellinger, I was wrong about Bellinger. I'm glad we signed Belly. And, you know, that's something where, too, like, with this offseason, you don't know how things are going to work out. You don't know, you know, what things are going to look like once the season actually unfolds, and that's for better or for worse. With Bellinger, the production is great, and, you know, him protecting Judge is just perfect, especially with Rice now ahead of Judge. If Bellinger was a guy behind, you know, Judge in the three spot like he is right now, but Rice was still hitting fourth or fifth behind Belly, then it's like, all right, that's ridiculous. But with him behind Judge, knowing, you know, the way he performs the runs in scoring position and everything that he provides just as a ball player and obviously the defense as well, not to mention he's just like a perfect fit for this team, him after Rice, Judge, and then Bellinger third works out so well. And with the lineup, not to, you know, talk too much about a point we've discussed many times now, but once Stanton comes back, I really want to see Rice lead off. I would do Rice 1, Judge 2, Bellinger 3, Stanton 4. And then with Trent Grisham, I really still don't mind the idea of him leading off. And until Stanton comes back, he'll remain there. and him leading off on Saturday. We were not going to talk about Grisham today, but he did great. Had a two-run homer. Was it a three-run homer? Also, at-bats continue to be really lengthy. He's working walks. I don't mind Grisham in the leadoff spot, but ultimately I would like to go the route of Ben Rice there, Judge 2, Bellinger 3, Stanton 4, Grisham 5, and then you can do Jazz 6. The Yanks are playing McMahon a little bit more lately, but you know what? Let's get to McMahon because he's actually hitting the ball pretty well lately. Over his last 15 games, McMahon is 11 for 38. That's an 852 OPS over his last 15 games, and that's a 289 batting average he's got over those last 15. Went 3 for 4 with a double on Sunday. Back-to-back games where he's had a opposite field double, which similar to his home run against, Kansas City, which was the go-ahead. McMahon's fly balls to the opposite field have been carrying. And we've seen that this past weekend with these two doubles, which were like carbon copies of each other. Like, just very much a fly ball, not exactly can of corn, but a fly ball that just keeps on carrying, ends up hitting the base of the wall. He had a double yesterday, double on Saturday, 3 hits overall in the day. And, you know, his at-bats have looked better. It's nice to have some stats to actually back it up. But we've been saying this on the watch party, and we'd say it like in that bat that could still end in a strikeout or end in, you know, him getting out. But he hasn't looked helpless at the plate. And this is his, like, the stats side. We've been saying this with the eye test. Like, his at-bats look better. He's been a little bit more aggressive early in the count. Like, it felt very much like, to begin the year, it was just like, automatically McMahon would be taking, like, the first two strikes and then look terrible on the third strike swinging. He's been a little more aggressive over the last couple weeks. And, like, the eye test backs up what the stats show, which is he looks like a more competent hitter at the plate. That's all well and good. That throwing error yesterday was absurd. And it was while I was watching the game with that thought in the back of my brain. It's like, man, why does it feel like, you know, the shoe's going to drop all of a sudden? Like, it just felt like something about the vibes, and it was right after the Ben Rice thing. We were still waiting on the deal. It was like, I don't know, like the one inning this year that just felt like the 2023 Yankees. And they quickly shored up with the double plays and ended up winning 11-3. But when McMahon made that error, I remember seeing the ground ball to third base. I'm like, all right, McMahon, just make this play. And like, we'll be good. Quick out for Fried. And he, terrible throw. I'm just like, oh my God, what are we doing? I even posted my story. I'm like, man, McMahon, what the hell was that? He's been a negative defender actually this year. Defensive run saved has him in the negatives. As of average, he's still shown his league average. He's a great defender, which is why the fact that he hasn't been is pretty frustrating. And he made great plays. It's just some of it, it's really just his throws. Some of his throws have been off, and yesterday that continued. Nothing much to discuss here other than this. That's got to be cleaned up. McMahon's throws have to be improved, and I think they will be. So nothing else to say other than that. So we'll leave it on the positive while acknowledging that the throws have to be better, and I imagine they will be. But we'll leave it on the positive, McMahon, because more so what the concern would be is his offense. And he's been playing lately. He's been hitting. 852 OPS over his last 15 games. Let's discuss some other things here really quick before we get out of here. Fernando Cruz and Brent Hedrick I want to discuss, as well as Tim Hill. But Tim Hill, we knew he was great. I mean, I shouldn't phrase it like that because Cruz, we also know, has been great. But what I have it here headlined as is the Yankee bullpen is a weakness, but not entirely helpless. Where would we be if not for Fernando Cruz, Tim Hill, and Brent Hedrick? So the Yankee bullpen, we know, lacks depth and is going to be the main focus come the trade deadline, and rightfully so. And there's other things that we've talked about that we know will help out where, you know, Rodon and Cole come back, or just looking ahead to the postseason when you only need four starters. Weathers and Warren, when they go to the bullpen, that will help deepen our staff immensely. And then, you know, we've talked about LeGrand here a lot. I don't know if we'll see him this year, but, like, maybe we will. More so about the trade deadline, though. The Yankees need to, and I think they will, go all in on shoring up this bullpen for October. So long term, I'm really not all that worried. But for now, it remains their biggest weakness. Where would we be without, you know, Fernando Cruz this year? 12 and 2/3 innings pitched, 2.84 ERA. He's been really good with inherited runners. 19 strikeouts for Cruz, by the way, in 12 and 2/3 innings pitched. Tim Hill, automatic out every first pitch yesterday too. Like, he just comes on, bang, instant out. Be getting hella double plays. He has a 1.38 ERA in 13 innings pitched this season, 0.62 WHIP. And yeah, by the way, Brent, we'll talk about Brent Hedrick in just a second, but David Bednar has been, you know, making it stressful in the ninth. Ultimately, let's give, you know, credit where it's due and be fair here. He's 9 of 10 in saves, and his one blown save was a game in Tampa, which was the extra inning game, so, like, you can't really even count that. I'm not saying it's been pretty, and I'm not saying I'm not down to, you know, if there's a trade available to get a legitimate closer. I'm not saying I don't want, you know, if Yoán Duran, if the Phillies are out of it, let's just say, and he's available, you can go get him. All right, word, bring him in here. And if you want to have him pitch the ninth and be your closer, all right, word. Bednar's going to be a part of this bullpen, the back end, very much so, wherever, whatever inning he's pitching. But he hasn't been bad. I mean, he's been, like, frustrating and, you know, stressful to watch, but 9 out of 10 saves. He got a 3.29 ERA. But, yo, particularly the one to celebrate here is Brent Hedrick. a 1.59 ERA in 17 innings pitched this season with 17 strikeouts. He's been consistently relied upon, brought in more than any other reliever by far in the Yankee bullpen, and I think he still leads MLB in appearances so far. At the very least, he's up there. He has just been a horse for the Yankees out of the bullpen. Boone keeps going to him, and that's because he keeps performing. Again, a 1.59 in 17 innings pitched this season. Brad Hedrick has been great, and again, where would we be without all these main guys, and Cruz, Tim Hill, Bednar? Duvall continues to be inconsistent and frustrating because it's like the stuff still looks good, and in one game he'll look great. The next game, kind of, you know, some tough luck, a couple infield, you know, ball gets around, wild pitch, but a leadoff walk. Like, Duvall's been frustrating, but ultimately, Brent Hedrick, if we didn't have him, I mean, we might really be in a different spot this season because he's continued to come up time and time again. So the bullpen needs to be addressed. We know that, and it will be addressed. But in the meantime, let's celebrate what has at least made it, again, not entirely helpless, and Brent Hedrick in particular has been possibly the biggest reason for that. Shout out to Brent Hedrick because he's been a big part of the season. Big part of this season. And you kind of figured that, well, the Yankees bullpen needed help, and it's one area this offseason that I still don't agree with. They should have, you know, gotten some sort of reliever in here. You figured that the Yankees would still work their magic a little bit and, you know, turn a guy that, you know, Jake Bird was one of these guys coming into the year, which it hasn't really worked out so much for him. He, by the way, has been pretty brutal with inherited runners. You know, he hasn't really panned out this year. He could have been one of these guys. But, like, Brent Hedrick was one of them where it's like, all right, not a guarantee, not a sure thing by any means, but he could be. And so far, he's really turned into that. He's been relied upon more than anybody in the Yankee bullpen this year. So shout out Brent Hedrick and shout out to you know, the rest of the guys we mentioned as well. One more thing to discuss on this show. Do want to acknowledge that Spencer Jones has began hitting, and hitting really well, particularly as of late. Yesterday, two home runs, including what was, you'll see later on here, a grand slam. And on the season now in AAA, Spencer Jones, 10 home runs, 37 RBIs, which 37 RBIs is a pretty insane mark to be at this early in the year, obviously. And the slash line, he's up to a 952 OPS. He's hitting 261, 366 on base, 586 slugging. He does have 43 strikeouts, which on the season is a 33% K rate for Spencer. But over the last few weeks, he's off to a really bad start. He was striking at like 50% of the time at AAA for the first week of the season. Over the last few weeks, he has gotten that K rate under 30, rather. So he is showing improvement there. And if Spencer can be, you know, on the season, he's at a 33% K rate. But if it's like, you know, if he's a true like 27, 28% K rate at AAA, all right, now we're talking a little bit. And, you know, before, like we were saying, if Ben Rice were to go down, which he's not, he's day-to-day, but if like an IL situation were to apply then, or were to happen, would the Yankees consider Spencer Jones calling out to play, whether him playing first base, but it'd probably be Bellinger plays first, and along with Goldschmidt, you get Jones some time in the outfield. I don't see him being called up anytime soon, but if he can get the K rate below 30% and, you know, he's producing, the homers are there, the OPS is at 952, like he is hitting a AAA. He will be a factor somewhere, whether it's with us or trading him at the deadline, which I don't know. Do I lean they should trade him? Maybe at this point you just run it out, but I almost feel like if they run it out, like we still may not see him this year. And then you kind of are another year of AAA, continue to work in that K rate, and then Trent Grisham's a free agent at year's end. You assume they probably wouldn't bring him back, but I'm not going to rule it out, to be honest. Spencer Jones does play center field. He could be the heir to the throne of the Yankees' everyday center fielder. We'll see if that's in play next year. For this year, I don't know what situation calls for him being called up. Like, obviously, injuries. But I don't even know if it'd be like a Ben Rice IL stint. I don't know if that would be the way the Yankees go. But nonetheless, he is hitting a AAA, two homers yesterday, including that grand slam. 10 homers, 37 ribs, 952 OPS down to AAA. So I want to give him a little bit of a shout out. But anyways, obviously we got some really rough news today that John Sterling has passed away at the age of 87 years old. And as we mentioned, and a lot of people will never forget him. His voice will be heard for years to come throughout my entire life, throughout my kids' lives. They will hear the voice of John Sterling because he goes hand in hand with everything that we love about this franchise, whether it be obviously the winning, he goes hand in hand with that. Kind of like the class and pride and like way that we like to assume the Yankees still do carry themselves. John Sterling held up every bit of his end of the bargain. He was a class act, and we're going to miss him. We're going to miss him. 87 years old. Yankees posted, the Yankees mourn the loss of legendary broadcaster John Sterling. Our thoughts are with John's family, friends, and loved ones at this time. Absolutely. 1938 to 2026. Rest in peace to a legend. We will never forget you, Mr. John Sterling. All righty. That is going to do it for this episode, chat. Reminder, this is now 5 days a week, this show is. So we'll be live again tomorrow morning. We'll also be live tonight for the watch party at 7. 7:05 first pitch, Yankees-Orioles, going for the sweep of the Orioles, a four-game sweep. And it'll be Cam Schlittler versus Shane Baz. We'll be live for that game around 7 o'clock. And after that, live again tomorrow here with the Morning Yankee Show at 8 a.m. Live 5 days a week now, Monday through Friday. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode. Hope everybody has a great start to the week. As of right now, the sun is indeed shining. I believe it is supposed to be sunny today. I feel like it's been sunny so much when I'm on the show, and the second I get off, it gets cloudy and gloomy. I don't like that. I like the sun. The sun's good for you. We all need vitamin D. It lowers your cortisol, chat. But yeah, I appreciate you guys so much. This has been a blast. Again, I'm working on game highlights, but in the meantime, like, it just is what it is. Like, the game highlights are on a hiatus, unfortunately. So hopefully at some point they'll be able to be worked out. In the meantime, this is just what the situation is. Game highlights are on a break. But we'll keep running out with the live streams, Morning Yanks, and the watch parties and all that. So thank you guys so much for tuning to another episode. That will do it for this one. And yeah, have a great rest of your day. We'll keep thinking about John Sterling. We'll talk about him tonight as well, and we'll talk about him forever. Rest in peace to John Sterling, forever a legend, and forever the voice of the Yankees. I will see you guys later tonight. In the meantime, have a great day, and let's go Yankees.